up an inspection on the site. So there's slight complexity there.
Suffice to say that the area which is affected by this development, there is an area of wall which does appear to be of the historic, of the original historic wall, and that's why we're saying that in respect of this development and in respect of that part of the wall that's affected, it's safe to say that to assume that it is listed.
Okay,
thank you.
We'll consider that assumption and probability.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I now take Councillor Morris?
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid it's along the same lines because it is something that has come up in the addendum report. So I'm just...
Forgive me, Catherine, you're not going to talk about the war again, are you?
I'm going to ask a very specific question about a paragraph in the addendum report, which is about the war, but I just wanted clarification from the officers.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Chair. So I just wanted to understand... Paragraph 17, the public benefits, etc., etc., in the addendum report, say the opening up of the wall cements the relationship of the site to the Imperial War Museum better than a building hidden behind a high wall. But I'm looking at photographs, and I wouldn't say that was a building hidden behind anything, so I'm a little bit concerned that the potential justification for allowing the wall to be knocked down, interfered with, remodelled or whatever, on the basis that otherwise the building would be hidden behind a high wall. Unless these images are not correctly proportionate, I don't understand that comment.
Thank you, Councillor. I'd like to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I'm only referring to the actual works to the wall there. In that paragraph of the addendum report, I'm not suggesting that the building will not be hidden. I'm saying that the works involve removing of parts of the wall and creating new openings within the wall, as you can see in the image before you there, and in the images that you held up. These openings and these connections back to Harmsworth Park and the Imperial War Museum are an important part of this development and are part of the visual and actual physical connection between this building and the museum that it's intended to be connected to. And that's where, you know, if that wall were left without openings in it, it would be a building behind a wall. That's all we were making clear within that addendum report. It's the actual openings within the wall that we're referring to there.
I'll let you, if you wish to ask a further clarification. No, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you.
Other contributors?
No. Very good. Astonished. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And I won't ask, unless there are other questions you wish to ask, we can always return to officers later on. Thank you for your presentation. I'll now move to the next contributor or an objector. Can I kind of identify who are an objector? Is there an objector? Please, if you can come forward, if you could just identify yourself.
Two colleagues with me.
Yes, so they can all come forward. Can I ask you, please, before you begin, just to identify yourself, secondly, point out that I'll give you 3 minutes once you begin. Can I ask you, first of all, just to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Terry Hannafin. I'm the chair of West Square Residents Association.
I'm Louis Leach. I'm a resident at Brook Drive.
And I'm Colin Johnson from Harmsworth Mews.
Welcome.
Chair, before I start, could I just ask you?
Of course.
I want to refer to a couple of the drawings that were in the councillor's packs, and at least one was in the presentation by the officer. But it's hard for me to sort of say where it is in your pack. And I've got photocopies of them here, of those drawings. And I just wondered, can I give them to you so I can say, if you look on page one, They're basically things...
You're referencing our pack, in other words.
Yes. But I'm...
So we'll...
Can he find it in the pack if I say what it is?
The officer, you can, if you ask for the particular image to be shown, I'm sure we can arrange that.
Well, before I start, could you find the north elevation? I think it's about 10 or 11, is it? The north elevation. That one, yeah, that's fine. Okay, that'll do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in other words, as soon as you're beginning, it will be 3 minutes.
We asked the committee to reject the application on the following grounds. Firstly, overlooking. Paragraph 76 of the officer's report says the SPD specifies a minimum distance of 21 metres. Paragraph 77 says that because the proposed building is office workspace, the SPD separation distances can be applied with some flexibility. So a minimum and flexibility. We argue that the flexibility can work both ways. The design and the proposed use mean that more distance is required. The minimum isn't enough. Please see the first picture, that one there, which is from the application. It shows three picture windows as well as slot windows on each floor, and this is facing Harmsworth Mews. Each story of the building is 4 metres high, so the picture windows are about 3 metres high. They're a similar width. If there were to be a condition insisting on opaque or frosted glass to a height of 2 metres, that would prevent overlooking while allowing sufficient light to office workers. But that condition hasn't been included in the officer's recommendations. We'd like to see it as a minimum. Also, contrary to paragraph 83, the office use is a problem. Substantial numbers of staff will be there. It's not like a house or two or three houses. Substantial numbers of staff will be there. Some staff will have desks adjacent to the windows. Also, contrary to paragraph 83, many of the surrounding occupiers will actually be at home during the day. These include retired elderly people, young children, homemakers, and those who work from home. Paragraph 82 refers to seasonal screening offered by Tree 6. The number is the number as per the application. But the screening that Tree 6 offers is much less than shown, it's the one in the middle there, on the applicant's artistic impression. I was going to refer you to the tree strategy, which is in somewhere in your documents. The tree strategy is put in by the applicants. And you'll see that on page 3 of that, there's a photograph with the tree. And you see, if you look at that photograph, you'll see that there's no branches, there are no branches or foliage until at least the second floor of the proposed building. So it won't provide very much screening, even in the summer. But also, for 5 or 6 months of the year, it has no or few leaves.
30 seconds.
The third page shows how... we're asking you to use your flexibility to protect residents from the obtrusive overlooking. A second point is that 91 to 99 Brook Drive all experienced substantial subsidence in the last few years. The council approved the removal of 5 trees near their garden walls in the last 10 years, yet the application proposes 3 new trees to be planted adjacent to that garden wall, near the houses that have got massive subsidence.
Thank you. Your time is up now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, questions, please. Councillor Jason.
Do you have anything further to add?
The final thing I was going to add, I think you may have covered, because it was about the listed building and referring to Hallwood's 1815 map. It shows that their wall was part of the Bethlehem Hospital curtilage, which was the listing was applied to. That was going to be my last point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. Can I just confirm that your issues are about sort of overlooking, particularly from the office building, but you haven't raised any issue about the height and the scale, the size of the development. Is that because you don't particularly have an issue with the size of the height and the scale of it?
No, it's because the overlooking is, the result of those other things. So the height of the building, if it was 2 storeys, it wouldn't be anything like as bad. The third story increases the overlooking quite a bit. So the height is a problem. And, of course, I mentioned the distance, which we think the guidance is, that your own SPD is a minimum of 21 metres. between residential dwellings, but flexibility if it's not if one of them isn't residential. And so I think our point is that because of the proximity and the height, the overlooking is very severe, and the use of the building as well. It's going to be an office use, so a lot of staff in there, you know, can look out, and it's, you know, it's really obtrusive for the people there.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, you've described the concerns about overlooking in some detail. You mentioned the concept of frosted glass, I think, to the first 2 metres or the bottom 2 metres, I presume, in each of the window panes. Just so I'm clear on your position, if we were able to secure an additional condition for that frosted glass, would that overcome your objection? Would that sort of satisfy you in respect of the
Ideally, we would like the application rejected, so the applicant went back and maybe came back with a two-storey building. But the condition would be enormously helpful, because it would mean that the overlooking, which is residents' biggest concern, would that, you know, that they wouldn't be able to overlook. So if you go up to 2 metres, that's just above the tallest person. Yes, yes. And actually, there'd be a metre above that, which would be completely clear. So the office workers would still get lots of light from that.
Councillor James.
So we received a letter from you as well, and that outlined a number of other issues and a number of other conditions you wanted to be imposed. For instance, blinds with timers, restriction of hours of use, sources of machinery, etc. Am I right in saying that those are no longer a concern for you?
Well, some of those have been covered. We obviously have read the officer's report in detail and the conditions. Some of those, like hours of use, are in the conditions. Some of those, like that the building, the new building, should only be used as an ancillary to the museum, to the IWM, not to anybody else. They're in there. So I think most of those conditions have been met. We were concerned about other things like overshadowing and so on, but we've read the officer's report and we think, well, there is some overshadowing, but in terms of the BRE regulations, the planning position, if you like, technically, it's probably not enough for you to reject it. Is there anything else? Just ask Colin.
Mark, could you turn up your mic there?
If I could just add to that, one of our other concerns is light pollution. And I know in the report it says that if somebody's working late, the lights will only come on in the area that they're working. And I have lots of sympathy with somebody who's got to work very late in the evening. But we've sent you some photographs of light pollution from the existing annex building, and they've been taken at the most recent one at 5 o'clock in the morning, but it's been as early as 1 o'clock in the morning. And that, we actually heard from the Imperial War Museum, it's caused by their cleaners, and that'll be a squad of people going through the whole building. So we are still definitely concerned about light pollution.
Nope. Further questions? You're of course available for questions later on, but thank you for your presentation. Thank you. Can I request that the applicant or applicant agents now come forward? As you heard earlier on, you have 3 minutes. Can I ask you, first of all, before we begin, ask you to introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Anne Carter. I am the Assistant Director for Major Projects at IWM.
Hello, my name is Kelly Ryder. I'm the Planning Consultant representing Imperial War Museum. I'm from the Planning Lab.
Good evening, Howard Pye from Jessica & Wells Architects.
Good evening, Craig Ackers from AMR Consult Project Managers.
Thank you very much. So you have 3 minutes, of course, and we encourage you to use your time to direct members' questions for you thereafter. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Last year marked IWM's centenary. Reaching 100 makes you reflect, not just on your past, but on the future. Like all publicly funded bodies, IWM's grant and aid is reducing year on year, and we have to generate much more of our own income. As part of our review, we have looked at strategic operations across the whole of the museum, but most importantly, we've looked at how we transform how our staff work in order to generate that necessary income so that we remain viable into the future. Our staff now work in multidisciplinary teams across our five sites. We want to retain and recruit the best people to secure our future. And to do that, we need to create a headquarters building with excellent facilities, which allows our staff to work collaboratively and, most importantly, productively. All Saints, our current corporate hub, is in need of significant work, and it requires quite a lot of money to convert it into modern office facilities. The senior team at the museum looked at a whole range of options, including selling the site, moving it elsewhere, but we concluded that we wanted to remain in Southwark, that we wanted to invest our money in the new build that's on the screen in front of you, and that we would tenant the existing All Saints building with someone who is compatible with the work that we do, but also could put the money into rejuvenating that building. We understand that creating a new building to the rear of the building is a big change. We've worked very closely with the planning team here, and we've held five consultation meetings with our neighbours. These meetings have all influenced the design, so we've responded to the planning team's desire for a high-quality modern building that wasn't a pastiche of the vernacular architecture in the area. The proposed scale and mass of the building has been through many iterations. We've actually reduced the scheme. It was four stories to three. We've set the building, as has been explained, 21 metres from neighbouring properties as set out in the council's policy documents to prevent overlooking and to protect privacy. We've designed the foundations so that we can keep the mature trees, because I think we should keep those. They're a useful amenity for us and our neighbours. We've chosen high-quality materials to finish the building so that it sits well in the local area and is an asset to the conservation area. We have reorganised how we're running the building, so we've moved the waste and recycling to our main building at IWM London so that we minimise disruption to our neighbours. And we've sought to improve the security to the rear of the park by building into the wall, providing some passive surveillance, because that's an area where there's a lot of very antisocial behaviour. So being in that area, we hope that we can help to reduce that. We think the scheme that we've put forward is modest. We want to stay in Southwark, but unless the scheme is viable, we will have to consider what we do with that site and where we site our headquarters.
The time is up. Thank you very much. Thank you. This time I'll start from the far left. Councillor, go ahead.
Sorry. How would you react to frosted glass?
We have considered everything while we have designed this building very, very closely to meet the regulations. We prefer not to frost the glass, but we would consider maybe looking at the large picture windows to find a solution there.
Thank you.
That is my question as well, Chair.
Okay, very good. Thank you for being useful. Councillor Morris. Very good. Councillor Morris.
Thank you. Sorry, can I just clarify that the purpose of this is so that your staff have somewhere to work so that you can rent out the building at the front to generate income. Have I got that correct?
We have been doing a lot of reorganisation in the museum. So, as explained by the officers, we had a lot of collections based in that building. We're consolidating our collections at Duxford so that we can give them much better care. So large areas of the building have become vacant because of that. We've reorganised our staff. A lot of staff have moved around our sites. We have five sites. They've gone to Manchester. They've gone to Duxford. So the number of people based there has reduced. So the building, one, as I said, is structurally difficult, but actually, it's now too big. So as part of our deliberations, we have considered the best solution to housing the staff who are still based in London and this is the most appropriate solution for us.
Jason.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your representation. So IWN is a historical building, one that you and I are very proud of.
Thank you.
And so preserving the history of it must be incredibly important to you and, of course, to us. So as such, I'm just curious why an independent assessor, say, Historic England, didn't carry out an independent assessment of the wall in order to clear the discrepancies which were noted by the officers.
Hello. So this issue arose this morning. We've had lengthy discussions on the wall, and a report was produced by Alan Baxter with our professional opinion that the wall was not listed. Researching historic maps and looking at cartilage issues and the relevant guidance. So we've been grappling with this today and trying to sort of provide evidence to respond to additional information submitted by residents. But essentially, All Saints itself is not a listed building. And there is, I mean, while it's in a conservation area, so there are considerations to think about, it's not listed. So it's not something that would come under the jurisdiction of Historic England. And they wouldn't generally get involved for something of the scale for to say if the wall is potentially listed or not. So.
Just to clarify my point, if I may, Chair, reference to Historic England was just an example, but yeah. An independent assessor. But as you know, it came to your attention today.
So, yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So no information was given to you about, or no discussions in relation to the wall had been had before today?
We have had a number of discussions on the wall, and it has been agreed that it wasn't listed, but there was some further evidence that came to light. So we've responded to that. We still don't believe it is listed. And we have Richard Pollard here today from Alan Baxter, who can speak on that a little bit more if it's useful. But in general terms, you know, we have had this discussion with your planning officers, and we accept the way it is being presented this evening, and to move this forward, then, you know, if that's what we have to agree at this stage and we have a way forward, then we'll proceed with that.
Thank you. No? Yes. Hold on. Go ahead.
Just further on the wall, there is a plaque on the inside of the wall which states that it was part of the Bethlehem.
We don't know whether that was there from time immemorial or whether it's been moved. That wall's been massively reconstructed.
But there are parts of the wall that are obviously very old.
Yeah.
And parts of it that are new brick.
Yeah.
So obviously, yeah. You know, we have to go very carefully.
Sure. I may take one more question on the wall, because I think we may have gone back and forth on this quite a lot this evening. Unless there is a substantive question that has not been raised in relation to the wall, I'll take it. Otherwise, I want to move on to other items.
I was sort of toying with asking this already, but I'm just conscious that the planning consultant said that the gentleman from Alan Baxter is here, their consultant's on the wall. I just wonder whether he might have anything useful to add at this stage if the committee wanted to hear from him.
Happily, I'm happy to do that, but if I may, no more than a few more minutes on the wall. There are clearly other material planning matters in relation to this application. Please come forward. Can I ask you just to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Richard Pollard. I'm from Alan Baxter. We've been helping the museum with historic buildings advice for about 7 or 8 years. The business, as has been explained by officers about curtilage, is ridiculously complicated. And a matter of opinion, our view, for what it's worth, is that the wall is shown on that site before the hospital acquired the site as the boundary to the residential properties on West Square, what was then called South Street. In other words, it is an old wall. There are bits of old wall, there are bits of new wall, all the rest of it, but we don't believe it was actually built by the museum. We think it was there beforehand. And anyway, it was separating two sites, the residential sites, and subsequent development on what is now the park site, which wasn't part of the operation of the hospital. And when the building was listed in 1972, which is another consideration for the, as the courts have said, for curtilage structures, it wasn't associated, owned by the museum. It separated the park from the annex. So for most of its history, it has not been related to the listed building, and we don't believe it was built by the Bethlehem Hospital who built the listed building.
Thank you for that clarification. Can I ask you to turn off your mic, please? So we've heard the more definitive statement supported by the officers here. Are there any further clarification required in relation to the wall? Otherwise, I'm going to close this particular aspect of our discussions down and move on to other matters. Fine. OK, thank you. Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. So I just wanted to get some clarification. So this is going to be purely an office building for the staff. It's not going to be open to the public at any point. So the whole thing about making it accessible from the park and all of that is only accessible for the staff. It's not
accessible
to the public.
Yes, it's basically to provide the connection as currently between the current All Saints building and IWM London, so staff move between the two sites.
Okay. And so can I then, if you're going to be wholly in control of and using that, we've heard about frosted glass, the potential for frosted glass, but also I wanted to ask about hours of use of the office space, and in particular hours of use of the terrace outside, the sitting outside, because, obviously, it's not... If it was a cafe... public cafe, we would put hours of restricting the use of it, and wondered what you if you had any thoughts about restriction on that.
I think it's been a condition, hasn't it? Do you want to?
Sorry, yes. Condition 20, hours of use of the outdoor dining spill out space associated with the ancillary canteen cafe.
What page
I don't have the same copy as you, but the condition is condition 20.
Thank you.
And those hours just match the typical working hours of IWM employees.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of lights in the building, or in terms of the hours of use of the offices, what do you anticipate with that? That would be, because obviously frosted glass is not going to stop light pollution, and I wondered whether or not you would consider some film that you can put on your windows, apparently, that stops the light.
I mean, just to answer the point on lighting and timing, it's a modern office building. It would be designed with sustainable principles. That would involve an element of presence detection for the lighting. So lighting in the areas of the office, as someone already alluded to, will only be on when people are in those areas of the office.
But one of the biggest problems is that the cleaners, the security people, whoever, walk regularly around the buildings, and they set off the lights at 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever time they're doing their patrols or their cleaning or whatever, which is it's a complaint we get a lot. Yes, this is a central London location, but obviously if we can mitigate anything at planning stage, it's much better than trying to deal with the fallout afterwards.
Yes, I mean, we have... talked about blinds. I think there was a discussion around a condition dealing with blinds. Something we will review with the client as we move forward, and I think they would be responsive to that.
Are there further questions?
Okay,
go ahead.
Completely different.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask about the very large tree. So we had a site visit yesterday. And although on the one hand, it's nice to have a very large tree, I did think that it was going to be really, really close up against the window of the building, and was in fact not thinking necessarily about the residence aspect of this, which obviously they've raised, but for the people who are working in that office, is that tree going to have serious pruning very regularly on one side to stop it from impacting on the office use?
I'm not a tree specialist, but we have engaged tree specialists who work with us hard to ensure that the health of that tree will be retained. It's an important part of the scheme for our client, and it does provide some protection for the amenity of the neighbours as well. In terms of its health currently, there are some issues with it at the moment. I think there will be some works to that tree. But typically trees are constrained by their overall in their overall growth by their root zone, and I would suggest that's an incredibly mature tree that's not going to grow considerably more inevitably all trees require some maintenance work, and that would be, you know, an ongoing obligation for IWM.
But in your view, it's a substantial enough distance away from the window to actually impact on the people who are working in the office?
Yes, yeah.
Separate item?
It's actually next to trees, but it's a different point.
Am I right in thinking, sorry, firstly, I may have just misremembered something, but I think the objectors said that there were plans to plant some additional trees. Is that correct? And if it's, yeah, three, that's what I thought. And can you provide any reassurance about the potential impact of those trees on the nearby properties?
Yes, certainly. There are three new trees proposed. You'll see on the screen there to the southwest corner of the site. One of those, in fact, replaces a tree that was recently removed under a separate application, which was causing some issues to the wall to the south. We have provided some details with the application about how those trees will be contained. They will be planted in a raised planter using a root containment system. Obviously, we're fully aware of the issues associated with structural problems associated with those trees in that area, and the proposal we put forward will contain that effectively. So they will largely be ornamental trees. They are native species, but they will be contained in their size and their ability to grow out with that container.
Thank you.
Further questions? Well, you'll be available for further questions necessary by the committee, but thank you very much for your presentation. Can I ask, please, for a supporter who lives within 100 metres of the development to come forward if there is a supporter? If not, I'll move on to the ward councillors. And before the ward councillors begin, I just want to make sure it's understood as to the level of interaction ward councillors have had within the process of preparing for this meeting. Prior to this meeting, we've held briefings to which ward councillors were invited and have participated. We've also visited the site, and which ward councillors were also present. And of course, ward councillors are more than welcome to make a presentation. I'd only ask, please, many of the initial objections I think have been noted within in response in the report. If we could develop upon those objections, if there are objections contained in your presentation. Thank you. You have 3 minutes. If you give me a moment, I have the technology. I'd like you to introduce yourself while preparing the technology. There you are.
Councillor Maria Linforth Hall, St George's Ward.
And Councillor Graham Neal, St George's Ward.
Welcome. You now have 3 minutes. Please begin.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the things that I'm going to mention are already being discussed, but the annex application will have a serious impact on 28 homes in Brook Drive, West Square and Handsworth Mews. Therefore, we ask that the application be rejected in the present form for the following reasons. Height. The building will be 3 meters higher than Handsworth Mews and proportionately more in respect of Brook Drive. Proximity to adjacent buildings. The new building does not meet SADC's guidelines of 21 meters. The separation between the building and the conservatory is only 17 point meters of distance. The boundary wall only provides a screening for the ground floor in the building, where there are no windows except in the canteen area. The conservatory roof is not opaque. The residents use blinds in hot weather. Overshadowing. The height of the new building and its proximity will result in overshadowing of Handsworth Mews. A report should have been commissioned on existing and transient shadow plots at regular intervals throughout the hours of daytime for the equinox 21 March to 21 September, midsummer 21 June, and midwinter 21 December. Overlooking and privacy. The proposed building has not both has both slot windows and very large floors to ceiling windows. Residents in neighboring houses will be overlooked in living areas, bedrooms, and gardens. The officers argue that there are large trees between neighboring buildings and the proposed new building. Unfortunately, they will only provide a seasonal screen. In addition, the foliage starts much higher than the artist's impression produced by the Imperial War Museum, from the second floor only. A listed wall, I think it has been discussed already, and we have provided a lot of extra information before the decision on the addendum. If nonetheless the Council is to approve the application, we ask the following conditions to be imposed.
30 seconds.
Well, the most important thing is tinted or frosted windows, like that example over there. That is the most important one. Thank you.
Thank you very much for keeping within time. Thank you. I think you may have disconnected your technology there. There you are.
Yes, I welcome questions.
If I can ask for questions from committee members to ward councillors, Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. So you said that that was the most important reason, condition that you wanted. Did you have others that you haven't had time to mention?
Can I ask you just to press your button?
Yes, I do have that. The first one was obviously that the windows on the north-south elevations be non-openable and frosted to a height of 2 meters to avoid overlooking. Therefore, tinted or frosted glass, we have mentioned already, will be very, very much welcome as a condition. The other one is to avoid nighttime glare, the window should be fitted with a timer and should be used to switch the lights on and off after working hours. We have already established what the working hours are, so I don't need to ask that again. The hours of use of the building be restricted to normal working hours. Source of noise, including the machinery on the top of the building and the cycle shed, be acoustically fitted to reduce noise as far as possible. The cycle shed and bins not be seated immediately adjacent to neighboring houses. Imperial War Museum says they will remove the waste from the building and take it to the main building on a daily basis. Do they necessarily need the bins in that case? If the collections are necessary, therefore, can they be done at midday? Those are the conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Further questions to the councillors? Councillor Morris, you again?
Yeah, if I may, just on that last point. So in the conditions, there's already servicing hours suggested in the conditions that any deliveries on loading and loading to the building within the rear yard shall only take place between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Monday to Friday. No deliveries, unloading or loading shall take place on Saturdays, Sundays and bank holidays. Would that satisfy your refuse collection arrangement, or would you, because you said midday, but would 8 a.m. be too, would you consider that too early?
I think so, because the majority of the people, if not all the people, especially in household meals, are housewives, people who work from home, or elderly people that they live in the house. They are all day in the house. So therefore, to disturb them at early hours in the morning, I think that it would be not a very nice thing to do. And also weekends, because weekends they won't rest, and so therefore it would not be good. Thank you.
Further questions to all councillors? Councillor, yep, go ahead. Oh, no, would you put your hands up? No, in that case, no. In that case, thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you. Right, members, I want you now just to remind you of the recommendation set out on page 13 and also, of course, the addendum report, which there are a number of amendments. Should I talk to those amendments, unless the colleagues wishes to reference I wonder if, officers, you just go through the addendum report and the amendments to recommendation to the conditions set out in the addendum report, please.
Sorry, yes, just to summarise the reasons for requiring these items. Firstly, the recommended alterations to draft conditions, which you can see under paragraphs 4, 5, 6, 7... Eight and nine relate to archaeological and tree conditions, and all we're doing in most of these cases is just inserting an extra clause that says that those conditions must be discharged prior to the works commencing, but with the exception of the removal of the porch cabins and shipping containers. Obviously, those are elements that do not, we consider do not contribute to the conservation area setting of the site, and therefore to preclude their removal by a condition that does not clearly explicitly state that they can be removed would be to no purpose. We are comfortable with the removal of the porta cabins and the shipping containers with the issuing of the permission and prior to these conditions being discharged. So that is why you will see that clause repeatedly included in those conditions. There are a few other conditions here. So condition 9 deals with the landscaping works. Prior to this addendum, the landscaping condition actually required those details to be submitted. All this condition is doing is, in light of our urban forester having considered a considerable amount of extra information, it's turning that into a compliance condition because he is now satisfied with the level of detail that's been provided on hard and soft landscaping across the site. Condition 10, or paragraph 10, is explaining that the previous condition, which we had proposed in terms of the material samples, which referred to a photograph rather than to the specification of each material, was not as precise as we would have liked. So we have now amended that to make clear what the specification is of each facing material. And then I think I've covered everything except for the curtilage of listing of the boundary wall, but obviously we have gone through that at length now. So hopefully that's clear on all the addendum items.
Thank you very much indeed. Can I just, before members come in, address the issue of overlooking and potential conditions in terms of the frosted or tinted glass? And I suspect frosted might be the way. Can you maybe suggest how we might condition that if we were so minded?
If it's a serious concern for the committee, I think it would be helpful to offices in terms of drafting a condition to sort of try and set some parameters so that we understand what you're seeking to achieve through the condition. I think the primary concern, as expressed by the objectors, was around what we call the picture windows, so the big square windows, rather than the slit windows. So I think if we could be clear on that, that would be helpful. I think The biggest vulnerability you would have to intrusive overlooking if you were a resident would be perhaps to staff who are sitting at a desk that's near to the window in a quiet moment, sort of looking out of the window. So I think it might be reasonable in terms of striking a balance between, you know, having a pleasant internal environment for the office workers and also protecting the reasonable expectations of the neighbours, to look at something which would not necessarily have to be frosting. It could be fritting that was... fritting is a sort of stripe or something which prevents you having a very direct view across the window. And perhaps look at something which obscures the view out when you are seated at your desk, but perhaps when a person is walking around the office, they are, you know, simply moving to and from a meeting or the coffee machine or whatever. That level of overlooking is perhaps less intrusive. So we may be, you may choose to be less concerned about that. So we may be happy to have a condition which simply worked on the basis of preventing the overlooking from people sitting at their desks. So they, I think in terms of the conversation, it would be useful to understand what members' sort of reasonable expectations might be.
Again, before members come in, I believe it, if I've understood the discussion we've had thus far, it's the third floor that has the particular concern.
I think the residents particularly were talking, it's the second floor, so the third level, okay. The second floor, you may want to comment on the first floor, but I think the second floor is probably where they would have a sort of downward view. Into the,
right. Yeah, okay. I'll start from this end. Sorry, Councillor. Okay.
Are these final comments?
Yes, your comments. Yeah. We've now entered our debate to discuss the evidence that's been received thus far by all the contributors, and we're now attempting to assess the evidence presented and what are we minded to do.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
So, having listened to what all parties have said, I'm minded to reject this application, and I'll tell you why. I can't make a decision on balance of probability. Of all the 14 material considerations, one of them is the conservation, And from what I understand, only discussions were had today regarding an independent person to clarify the situation, which you have said you're now treating the wall as if it were listed based on a conservative view. I think the decisions that we ought to make as a committee ought to be evidence-based, and we can't make decisions based on probability. So on those grounds, unfortunately, I'm minded to reject this application.
OK, well, you've gone in straight into an opinion straight away. Duly noted. It'd be useful if we might want to discuss the evidence presented before we express a view just here. But it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. Councillor Morris or McCash, who's first? Oh, next. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to get back to the issue of the windows, the overlooking, and the question of how we can try and potentially resolve that by condition. I think, assuming that my geography of the site is correct, it's only really the north and south windows of the building which are of any concern, in that the east and west don't face out over the any residential areas. I'm getting a nod, so I think that must be correct. It's a good job that I know my north, south, east and west. So I think our discussions are probably confined to those aspects. I personally feel that it's both the top floor and the middle floor, so the first and second floor, where there is some concern. I think the ground floor, broadly speaking, not least because there's a boundary wall around most of the site, there's not really any degree of concern. I don't particularly have any issue with, forgive me, I've forgotten the term you use, but it's slit, fritted. If that achieves the same outcome in terms of preventing overlooking, then that seems to be no bad thing. I do still have a concern about the slit windows, though, in just the same way as the sort of picture windows, because actually if the concern here is about people sat at desks who can look out and are overlooking a neighbouring property, actually it doesn't matter how big the window is they're looking through, it's still the view that they have, which is, I would say, of concern. So to my mind, a sort of, you know, parameters of a solution here would be to condition that that all windows on the first and second floor be frosted or tinted or in some way or fritted in some way to obscure any view up to the height of 2 meters above ground from within that office. That would be my suggestion in terms of a condition.
Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you very much. I'm going to go down to Councillor Cash.
I was going to say much the same as my council colleague preceding me said, and just to add that I think the distinction between picture windows and slit windows wasn't raised by the objectors or the councillors, but by the applicant. I think that's important to note.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I was going to say ground floor is fine because you can't see from the ground floor into anybody's windows. On the southeast or the south elevation, you've got the big lump in the front. What do we call it?
Pavilion.
The big lump. So that obscures some of the windows as well, doesn't it? So
there are no clear windows in that element of the building.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with Hamish.
Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to ask a point of clarification, actually, just because it was raised by the ward councillors about the refuse. Remind me where all the refuse storage bits are in here, because I couldn't see them obviously marked out. They probably might be marked on one of the many sheets.
So, just to be clear, and sorry, this is probably a more helpful image. In the northern corner of the site, there would be a single-storey structure, and it would be principally for storing bicycles for the employees of the Imperial War Museum new building. There would, however, be a very small portion of that given over to that would be designated as a space for the temporary storing of refuse. It's only a precautionary measure. The delivery and servicing plan, which has a refuse management plan within it, sets out that on a daily basis, refuse generated by the new building would be transferred on a sort of wheeled structure. It wouldn't be an automated vehicle or anything like that, but it would be taken from this new Class D1 building through Geraldine Mary Harmsworth Park to the existing refuse store at the Imperial War Museum London, and it would be stored there until the main collection takes place from Brook Drive, which is where the current IWM collection happens. So even though it's saying bin store on this drawing, it is really a precautionary part of the scheme, in that, say, for instance, some refuse was created after that daily transfer of waste to the Imperial War Museum London, it would be stored there. But this is a secure shelter, and so we consider that in the unusual event of some refuse being needing to be stored there, because it's a secure shelter, there shouldn't be any issue around odour disturbance or vermin or pests.
Thank you. You were just following up? Yep, go ahead. Just.
So I'm a bit... I'm not quite sure I understand why, although albeit a temporary arrangement that may not be used very often, if at all, why it's right tucked up in the corner away from the gates and right up against the back gardens of the Harmsworth Mews residence, why it's not somewhere nearer the gates, although albeit that would put it nearer to Brook Drive, but I think the gardens are slightly longer in the Brook Drive residence than they are at the Harmsworth Mews residence.
The sort of design principles behind the site are that on the southern, sorry, the design principles behind the site are that on the southern side of the building, it would be more of a plaza spill-out space. It functions more as an amenity space for the users of the building, and that the northern side of the building would be a little bit more functional. It is also where deliveries come in, so there would be a daily delivery to the cafe space. So it does have the character more so of somewhere that's sort of like a semi servicing yard, and cycles would also be stored there. So for that reason, it was a logical location for placing the bin store in that location. As I say, it would be used only very occasionally, and that was the logic behind placing the bin store in that part of the site.
Thank you.
Well, no, it is still on this, so I still don't understand the logic. So any bin collection that happens, or any refuse collection that happens, is going to go through this gate and out that way. It's not going to go out that way, so that's why I can't understand. So somebody's going to have to bring it from right in that corner, yeah, all the way round, and all the way round here, because you can't walk along the wall. That's enclosed, isn't it? The wall, the listed wall becomes part of the building. You can't cut through it. So that just seems bonkers to me, and I'd like the War Museum to rethink that, please.
OK, we've got the point. I suppose you've made the point as to as the underlying logic as to why it's located.
The main point is that actually the refuse would be taken from the D1 building through the park to the IWML every day, and that provision is made only in the unusual event that there might need to be a small amount of storage for refuse, and, like I say, it would be for absolute maximum for one day before the next collection takes place.
Thank you. I think the logic has been explained on three occasions now.
Different sort of question about the same point. So,
Fair enough.
It may just be a simple no, in which case that's great, but I just wanted to clarify, is the bin store solely for the use of the annex, or will it in time also service the All Saints building?
The bin store is for the use of the new building, at the All Saints Annex has its own refuse collection, and that takes place from Austral Street.
Thank you. I believe I saw Catherine Whittam. Did you have your hands up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if it's a wheeled structure that, or bin that comes round, it's an awful long way to be rattling round with the wheels. And also, can we change the servicing from 8 to 10 in the morning?
Well, that will be a proposal for later on, if I may. I wonder if Councillor Lord has any comments?
No.
No. That's fine. OK. Councillor Morris, yes.
Yeah, I had a comment on a different matter, and it is a comment. I don't know whether you want it at this stage. It's not a question.
A comment is fine.
OK. So I'm not sure that I could formulate enough of a reason to reject the application on it, but I have to have some sympathy with my colleague's comment about the wall. The listed wall element of it, and in particular, the clarification that this is going to not actually be a public building, so the public benefit, the wall being incorporated into this site, when it could actually have just been left separate and intact. I don't really agree with the officer's assertion that the public benefit of a building that is not open to the public or accessible by the public outweighs any harm to what is a listed structure.
Thank you. Councillor Mahash. I can't even get that right. And you must forgive me, you're both Macs, you see. Though.
Oh, did you?
No, it's holding me. There you
go. I just wanted to make a sort of build on that comment with another comment, Chair, which is that obviously, ordinarily, when listed building questions are an issue, we would have both the main application and the listed building consent application at the same planning committee meeting. And I recognise why that's not happened today, because actually the listed building, or the council's assessment, I suppose, of the listed building status has changed during the last few, the last week since this was published. But it does mean, I don't feel like we are giving a holistic consideration to all of the issues involved, because we're sort of limited in what we're actually voting on tonight. I suppose I just want to make that comment for the record, really, that it does seem a bit unfortunate that we haven't got both applications together.
I think that's duly noted. I'm not going to pursue that point, but it is duly noted. I'm going to make a few points myself, just so that and maybe Councillor Lord maybe want to contribute thereafter. First of all, I want to recognise that the applicant has gone through a number of reiterations of this application, and reducing the height of the building in response to local concerns was a significant step. I also want to note that I was always concerned that the curtilage of this building might actually be within metropolitan open land, and how therefore we respond to that situation. I understand it is not in metropolitan open land, so under those circumstances, for a building of this type to be constructed for the benefit of the staff of the Imperial War Museum seems appropriate. I'm satisfied that the design advice received implies that the design is sympathetic to the context in which the building is constructed. I'm satisfied with that. I am concerned the issue of the wall, it's only been resolved, or at least partially resolved, as of today, despite the long period in which this matter has been discussed, and I'm sure raised by both objectors, residents and others previously. It does seem very strange, and I acknowledge your point that it is unusual, and I've not had enough time to talk to officers about this situation, but it doesn't nevertheless detract from the fact that the application appears for me to be a sound application. It's a natural extension to a national monument. It is also accommodating and the use of an area of land which apparently has been unused, and we saw it the other night, unused for some time. So it's now bringing an area of land into use. I am sympathetic to the location, the setting, and it is the rear of homes, and I'm sympathetic that those homes have not had to experience a relatively tall building immediately to their rear, and I'm minded to seek a condition as regards tinting the glass, unless officers suggest that, a new word I've learned tonight, fritting is a more appropriate alternative, but I think I'm minded to do that. And up on the first, forgive me, the second and third, up to 1 meter, and therefore it is not.
First and second floor,
yep.
Up to 2 meters above ground.
I understood, and you must forgive me, maybe Councillor Whitton maybe would come in at this point, that the ground... Indeed. The first and second... You're quite right. Yeah. First and second floor, you're quite right. First and second floor are in fact, the two floors in question. The third floor is backed off, and therefore it's not a question.
There's
not a floor for that. Takes care of that issue. I've got it right.
Ground first.
We're
second.
Talking about...
make sure I've got it
this
right.
One. Ground floor
got
is
it.
Not a problem.
Got it.
First floor
I've got
and
it.
Second floor.
Got it. I've got it. Therefore, under those conditions, I'm minded to go forward with a condition to frost those glasses up to 1 metre.
So up to 2 metres?
Up to 2 metres. Well, yeah. If I may...
1 metre's waist height.
Yes.
So it wouldn't achieve the...
My recommendation is...
About the same as the Eastman is here.
Yes, I think, and I'm pretty mindful, and I'm expressing an opinion at the moment. I'm mindful that those who are sitting at the desk, okay, around a metre or so, would be suitable. 2 metres if you're standing up, and I think that a metre would be right. That's my recommendation. We might debate it later on.
I think. To obscure the view of somebody seated, we'd probably be talking about 1.5 metres. 1.24 feet.
1.4. There you are.
We're talking about height. We're seated up to here. 1 metre would be up to here.
Fair enough. This is the art of compromise. I'll concur with 2 meters. I think that was settled. Count to Mahesh.
So I too learned a new word today, fritted glass, and I've just kind of had a little look on Google, and it seems to be quite varied in what fritted glass means. Some of which obscures the view quite a lot, and some which doesn't really quite so much, and I was interested from a nod or shake from the objectors and ward councillors whether fritted glass would be something you'd be happy with. My instinct is that we should remove fritted glass from the discussion because no one doesn't really know what it is. So I think that frosted glass would be something. It's good enough for so the council, and therefore good enough for everyone else, I'm sure.
Thank you. Are there further contributions? No?
Just so we don't lose the servicing hours.
All right, in that case, and let's pin down these conditions first of all, and let's address the issue of the servicing hours first of all. Can you just repeat what you said earlier on to make sure we've captured it correctly?
Instead of 8 a.m., make it 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Comments.
8 a.m. is our standard time that we would normally use. So we'd need to be clear, I suppose, in our minds what was exceptional about this site that warranted a later time, because people can't always have such control over deliveries that they could be very specific about what time they will accept deliveries. We would normally take the view that 8 a.m. was sufficiently late to not be too disturbing to people.
Thank you. Do you want to talk to this point?
Not to this point, no.
Okay. If I may, before we go off it, the suggestion of 10 versus 8, if there are other views on this, other members, are we minded to leave it as is? Is there a seconder? Very good. We'll leave it as is. In that case, let's address the question of the fritted stroke frosted glass. The recommendation is that it should be frosted glass at 2 metre height at, get it right, and indeed, BRE, there you are. That's maybe part of the reason why. 2 metres high on the first and second floor. Are we minded, is there a consensus that should be the condition? Officer comment, maybe?
Yeah,
just for our clarity in drafting the condition, north and south, first and second I get, can I just be clear whether the expectation is all windows? I mean, we suggested the larger windows, but I think I've heard a counter view.
I've said already, just to reiterate, I would be keen to propose that we do condition that for all windows on those two elevations, simply because, I mean, from an overlooking perspective, I don't think it matters how big the window is. If you're sitting at a desk, if it's that window you happen to be looking through, then you're overlooking whether or not it's a foot wide or 2 metres wide.
Understood. Are colleagues minded to concur with that statement? Fine. I think we have a wording. We just need to pin down the wording. Do you want a precise wording now, or shall we resolve it later?
I don't think we need the precise wording. I think I understand you. First and second floor, northeast, southwest, all windows to 2 metres, obscured in a way that would prevent harmful overlooking, and the likelihood that is be your...
North and south.
It's northeast and southwest,
yeah.
But yes.
Are these new points, Councillor Morris? In fact, I've got to take Councillor Jason first. Well, he was first. Go ahead.
So, I'm allowed to propose a motion?
Well, we were commenting, but if you wish to propose a motion...
I'll go by your guidance, Chair.
Can I, first of all, just take Councillor Morris, first of all, if there's further clarification that we can go to motions?
On the issue of the lights coming on at night and all of those kinds of things, I don't know about blinds. Sorry, about blinds, whether that's an unreasonable request or... I don't quite know how we can mitigate against lights going on in the middle of the night when people do their tours of the building, or indeed if somebody is working late. People do work late sometimes, you know, in the modern world.
In planning, we normally take the view that blinds aren't easy to control through the planning system because they're like a curtain, they're a fixture. Mm. As opposed to a part of the building fabric which you could normally control through planning. So we wouldn't normally... And I think the applicant may feel that, you know, having had to accept a condition for opaque glazing may not also want to install blinds, because in many ways people have blinds to deal with sunlight and other things, and, you know, they wouldn't have to do that for them, so may not want to choose to put blinds in. And it's obviously a member's gift to impose it, but it's not something we would... perhaps normally do.
Thank you. Can I, if I may suggest, Councillor Morris, that whilst it is an interesting point, that for our purposes that we not pursue the question of blinds, it is an unusual condition, I must say. Now then, I'm conscious that Councillor Jason wishes to put a motion forward, although we technically already have a motion on the table. Okay. Is your motion intended to add to a current motion, or is it a straightforward black and white yay or nay?
It's a black and white.
Okay.
Based on the comments that I made in relation to this the point about the wall being a material consideration, and being on the planning committee and being mindful of the fact that it is a material planning consideration, on that point, I would like to propose a motion for this application to be rejected.
I recognise the motion. Is there maybe someone wishes to second the motion? Motion seconded by Councillor Morris. Are we ready to vote on the motion? Those who wish to vote for the motion?
Just double check reasons.
Oh, forgive me, I suppose. It's quite right. Yes.
Reasons for the proposed motion is the lack of clarity on the material consideration being conservation on the wall until there is clear evidence provided, and not probability, but clear evidence that around the wall and its conservation point. I would like to therefore reject put forward the motion to reject.
I don't know whether the legal officer will like to add something.
I think the we would need to be clear that the impact of the development, what was actually proposed, was harmful to the heritage asset. I think to seek to refuse a planning application on the grounds that there is uncertainty about a certain aspect would lead us to a rather questionable decision on face value. I don't know whether Alex, you can say something.
Yes, I would agree with that. An alternative might be to defer it if you wanted more information to be provided, as opposed to rejecting it, which might result in an appeal.
Point taken. On that point, I'm willing to defer the application until further clarification is put forward and potentially information on the conservation area, clear information, which is evidence-based, is given. Until then, I don't think that we can make an informed decision.
So you're amending your motion to not rejection, but defer until we've got the appropriate information. I see lots of hands up. is this to not to talk to his motion at this point, are we?
If I could add to it, that would be really appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. As I've expressed earlier, I find it quite difficult to holistically assess the application on the basis that we don't have the listed building consent application alongside it. While I perhaps don't see grounds to refuse the application as it stands for that reason, I do entirely sympathise with the concerns which have been raised. If the motion is now to defer the application, could I ask that the motion be deferred until such time as a listed building application can be made alongside it, or such time as it can be conclusively decided that no listed building consent is required? And that would at least allow us to consider the application in the round rather than speculate or apply a sort of informative to a hypothetical application that might come forward in the future. You don't look happy with me, Chair. Sorry.
I recognise concerns in relation to the wall, and I'm concerned that it wasn't resolved somewhat sooner than this. It does seem to be a pretty obvious item to have focused on. The question for me is the issue surrounding the wall and the statement made by officers in relation to potential conservation of the wall, is that sufficient to defer this item? Because it's already conditioned, and if it had to be brought forward, it would not detract from the construction of this building. So I'm trying to wrestle with that at the moment. Yep. Simon.
Chair, I think it would be... I'll look to my colleagues to just comment on this as well. Yes, we would normally prefer, if a listed building consent is required with an application, it would be normal to expect that they could be considered together. We have looked at this evidence that this wall does form part of the curtilage of the listed building, and Michael has told you our conclusions. Our view was that it is safe to make a decision on the planning application and then follow up with a listed building consent application when we are absolutely clear that that listed building consent application is needed. However, if members are of the view that they should be heard together, that is a legitimate view, I would suggest.
All right. If I can... Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to comment just yet. I'm going to take further comments from colleagues here. McCash, yes.
I was just going to add that if we're going to be deferring the application, we could then have
further information about the windows and the servicing hours as well, which would be positive. And then the other thing I just wanted to know is, this sounds like a very sensible suggestion to defer application. I'm just wondering if there's any reason, any negative implications that maybe perhaps we were not aware of deferring the application that the officers can inform us of, perhaps risks of, well, just risks in general.
I want just, if I may, Councillor, I won't pursue that just yet, because the motion is on the table. It has been seconded. Okay. Okay. In that case, if I may, I shall do this. One meeting. Members, please. Members. So it's the an amended motion that's been put forward by Councillor Jason. You've yet to second it, Councillor Morris, in the form that it's a. The proposal is that it would now be deferred and not rejected. So you have yet to second that motion. Are you minded to second that motion?
Sorry, just from a procedural point of view, are we absolutely certain that it is possible for a motion once seconded to be amended? Surely we should be voting on the motion as put forward, which may or may not fall. At which point another person could put forward a motion to defer, which may or may not fall. I just think procedurally, you know, we've had issues before with other developments about motions half being done, etc., etc.
Well, we had a motion to defer the application. Then the comments made after that, I would say, were largely based around that, about when the application and how long that would be deferred for. So it followed on from that motion.
I've been incorrectly interpreted before by this committee on a substantial application in the past, and I have learnt from that what our procedural legal rules are, and I see that our other planning officer is at the back of the room and can possibly concur with me that the motion that is on the table that has been seconded should be voted on. Now, I could suggest
I concur,
that it is very likely that the motion will fall.
Okay, if I may.
It might not.
So in other words, the original motion, that is the motion to reject the application, be heard first, considered first of all, and then follow on with the further motion to defer. So it's been seconded. Are we minded to support the motion to reject the application? Can you show your show of hands, please? To reject the application. Four. To reject the application. Yes. Yep, you proposed it, so you can vote for it.
Two.
Okay. Secondly, thank you. Those who do not support the motion to reject the application.
Five, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Jason, you have a further motion to defer.
Excuse the confusion, and thank you for the clarification, Simon and Alex. So on that, I would like to propose a motion to defer this application on the points until we get further clarification and for both applications to come together and also for us to get some clarification on the windows as noted by my colleagues. Is that clear?
That's clear. Thank you. Can I ask for... And it's been seconded. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're now going to vote on the motion to defer this application for the reasons outlined by Councillor Jason. Can I ask for those who wish to support that?
Five, Chair. You're not voting. Five, Chair.
That's four. Those who are against?
Five.
No, I see.
If I may, and those who were not supporting the motion,
two, Chair.
That makes up numbers. So the motion has been carried. So this application is deferred to a future meeting. Thank you. We'll take a 5-minute recess.